But I'm also not going to sit here and pretend that everything's figured out and there's not risk. I think, you know, there's still a lot that's changing in this space. And there is a lot of that hype. You got to make sure that this practice makes sense for your operation and start with the practice. Don't start with a carbon program. So if you're thinking about switching to something like no-till or strip-till, that's a big change. We're talking about equipment. We're talking about your weed control program. Like, this is that carbon isn't everything here. You got to treat the acre and you got to treat your operation. Carbon is just a layer on top of that.
Ladies and gentlemen, farmers, ranchers, and distinguished guests, thank you for listening to the Farm for Profit podcast, where we discuss the latest ideas, methods, trends, and techniques available to help your farm achieve higher levels of farm profitability. The Farm for Profit podcast is co-hosted by Tanner Winterhoff, the Iowa Bankerman, and David Whitaker, the Iowa Land Guy, where in tandem, they will share their ideas and advice from industry experts. Thank you again for listening to the Farm for Profit podcast. Remember, if you aren't farming for profit, you won't be farming for long. And now, here's Tanner and David.
All right, welcome back to another Farm for Profit podcast. This is Tanner Winterhoff.
And this is David Whitaker.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate you listening to our podcast. We know that there are a lot of options out there and appreciate you spending your time with us, Dave.
And if we could get them, Tanner, to go to our YouTube page and hit subscribe. If you guys don't know it and you're listeners and you kind of want to see some visual to it as well, we'd love for you to stop over to our YouTube page. Of course, everything we have is farm, the number 4, profit, LLC at gmail.com is our email address, but farm, the number 4, profit.
Exactly. That YouTube channel, we've got clips, so you got visuals of us doing these podcast episodes. We have the full episode out there as well. We wanted to kind of build up that content before we really push this, but now's the time for you as listeners to go over there, see if you can't hit that subscribe button, and we'll try and keep you entertained that way.
And Tanner, I always like to talk about any reviews we had. What are people saying?
Yes, this one is fun. This is from 185 Jacobs. That's a friend of the Burkhart family that we came across, and he said a very simple one. It's a good podcast.
Well,
so thank
like
you,
that.
Jacob. Thanks for leaving that behind. And don't forget that we have some financial partners with us on this podcast. Remember to check out BW Fusion and thank them for the continued support of our podcast. And look forward for the From the Field segments as we get further into the growing season, Dave.
And Tanner, of course, Gearing Hoff, head of the class, no matter the crop. And of course, they're partnering with us. We're the head of the podcast world. Well, maybe. Anyway,
we're still working on that.
I guess we're still working on that to build our skills, but we sure appreciate anybody partnering with us. So thank you to both those guys.
Yes, we do. So now let's get into what's working in ag. And instead of having a guest to introduce to you, Dave and I are doing a little reflection. So we are just now post that TBF auction and the TBF get together out at Dave's place. Thanks for hosting that, Dave. And we kind of picked up on some things about what happened in the whole period of putting that auction together and to get together to kind of capitalize that on that following Saturday. And what we want to hit on is why networking works. I mean, we've done an episode, Dave, before on networking, but why and how it truly works. Did you see that happening for you in this instance, Dave?
It was phenomenally crazy, if that's a word. when people from, you know, 3 or 4 states away drive, meet, talk with someone so far away, and it's all about networking because you have a common interest or a common skill or a common theme. And oftentimes, maybe as farmers, we can't network with our neighbors because they are our competition. So I saw a lot of networking happening.
Yeah. And if you go back to that networking episode that we had, if you think about it on the corporate front, there's a lot of reasons to why this is important to you as a farmer when you relate business to farming. So the first ones, you know, in the corporate world, it helps you raise your profile, it advances your career, and gets you an answer to every question. So that might not hit exactly home with you as a farmer, but just think about that. When you're face-to-face with a person, it's really hard to avoid answering questions.
Well, and it might just play right into farming too. When you talk advance your career, I bet everybody listening has, you know, BTO, a big time operator that they know in their area. There's a name. Oh, it's the Jensens, it's the Johnsons, it's the Whitakers, it's the it's the you know, Winterhoffs, whatever it might be. They probably raise their profile somehow. So, just as you said, for corporate, it might be raising your profile that when somebody goes to sell their land or look for cash rent options, who are they going to call? they're going to call you. And that's all about networking, whether it's at church or whether it's on TikTok.
That kind of leads into the next two that we had in our episode, was getting access to job opportunities and building those business connections. So the same thing, you might have someone from a different part of the country that knows a sister or a sibling or a cousin or somebody that's in your area that might be the next opportunity for you. But this is where I saw, this is the parts that I witnessed at that gathering and throughout that auction that benefited us, is the categories of gained more knowledge, got fresh ideas, got career advice, built my confidence, and continued to develop long-lasting personal relationships. So, I mean, that was a lot, but I saw all those happening. I gained so much knowledge. One, just from talking to Mike and his family, let alone the ancillary connections that we've made through TikTok and Twitter. Just getting to understand a lot more of what's going on in the ag community.
And it's not just something we wanted to do. There were people that drove from all over, 50 plus people, to do the exact same thing. So they're looking for the fresh ideas, the more knowledge. And there were some very knowledgeable people there. Is the way
very
I should
successful
word it.
Farmers.
And very
correct.
Successful farmers. And there's a lot that we can gain from that just by watching and taking it all in.
There's all levels of experience. Someone who is in their second year of farming all the way to someone who's been doing it their entire 30-year career. So that's kind of the point I wanted to share here in the What's Working in Ag segment, Dave, is just that networking is not for the corporate world only. That networking gets you a long ways in the agricultural world too.
So you don't just make relationships golfing. You might,
that's right.
You might make them drinking beer or being on TikTok or Twitter or something else. So that's what's working out in the ag world. So
you bet. All right. That was a great What's Working in Ag segment, Dave. Now it's time to talk one of the most buzzwordy topics out there on social media right now.
There's a lot of traffic on this one.
We have seen it all over Ag Twitter and Farm Talk. Carbon credits. The modern day gold rush. People are chasing after these like it is the gold out on the West Coast. So why don't we try and dive into and share with our listeners a little information, see if we can't help them make better educated decisions in the atmosphere of carbon credits. So we have a guest today with us. Dave, why don't you introduce Ben?
You bet. Ben Gordon is with us, carbon and ecosystem service portfolio leader for Corteva up in North Dakota. He's with Granular, grew up in North Dakota, surrounded by agriculture. And he's going to talk with us today, Tanner, about this gold rush that you're talking about.
Yeah, it was one of the guests that I think is going to help us out. He spent quite a bit of time with Granular working in consulting and technology, also had some time in the military. So welcome, Ben.
Nice to be here.
Why don't you go ahead and maybe elaborate a little bit more on that introduction about how you got into agriculture and what your role is today?
I have a little bit of a strange path where I decided to move to California to work in corn and soybean row crop agriculture, despite spending all my life in the Midwest. So grew up in Hillsboro, North Dakota, just north of Fargo. Dad worked for Deere. I have quite a bit of family and friends who farm, but was kind of a town kid myself. Went to school, joined the military, thought I was going to do that for the rest of my life, but hurt my back and decided, needed to become a civilian. And if you're not going to be a soldier, I think the next best thing you can do from a mission perspective is, try to do stuff for people that you care about and something that that impacts, everyone that you know.
Perfect. That's great to hear. So we are in an era now to where U.S. farmers can get paid for removing carbon dioxide, so CO2, from the atmosphere by then storing it in their soils.
Let me preface that though. You said get paid. I don't know anybody yet that's been paid. We might debunk this myth here on this podcast, but the perception is that you can get paid. I don't know anybody that's collected any cash yet.
That's correct. So Ben, what does this mean? What does it mean to collect CO2 in the soil?
Well, it actually depends on the program, and that's going to be a theme you're going to hear from me. It depends. But really, we're talking about farmers getting paid for some combination of soil carbon and or reducing their greenhouse gas emissions. So soil carbon typically comes from either increasing the microbial activity driven by either less soil disturbance, so tillage, or increasing the time that there's living roots in the ground. So it could be cover crops, could be double cropping, because that's providing those sugars to those microbes. On the greenhouse gas side, typically you're talking nitrogen management. So using an inhibitor or just using your nitrogen a little bit more efficiently. And, essentially what happens is, we try to measure the outcome. And then, there are investors or others that are paying for those outcomes for farmers.
So is this new? Did this just pop up or has this been coming for a while?
I don't think it's new to most folks that have been in the space for a while, and farmers certainly have heard this a few times. But I do think we're at a fairly new point for this in terms of it being real. Otherwise, I wouldn't be sitting here and I wouldn't be spending my time or put my name behind something like this. I think, you know, in terms of what actually, you know, makes it different today is I think we have real demand and real buyers out there because of, you know, the just kind of where society is at in addressing climate change and the commitments that companies are making to their investors that ends up with dollars in farmers' pockets. I also think we're at a new place in terms of our ability to measure these changes, whether it's carbon or greenhouse gas changes. But I'm also not going to sit here and pretend that everything's figured out and there's not risk. I think, you know, there's still a lot that's changing in this space. And there is a lot of that hype.
How much, Ben, how much government is in this carbon credit? I believe that carbon credits have been around for about 10 years. And if they have, that means it ran through the Trump administration, it ran through the Obama administration, and now to the Biden administration. I did it slow down in the Trump administration, and then we're just seeing it revisited with the new administration in office now? Or is carbon credits and CO2, has that been moving forward all the while?
I mean, I think it's pretty safe to say it's been moving forward all the while. And I think this is where it's important to understand there's a lot of different types of credits. So, you know, there's forestry credits, there's cook stove credits, and they all try to make them into just one type of asset. And that's where you get some of the complexities in this program. And then there's, you know, voluntary markets versus government. And so I think in its simplest form, the way that we look at it is, you know, we really want to bank on the demand that we feel is the strongest. And right now that's voluntary markets or companies doing things. But, you know, the Biden administration has talked a lot about the role of agriculture in their climate plans. And, you see things at a state level, in terms of either incentives around, things like cover crops, like you see in Iowa, or even a bill that was recently passed in Indiana. So, I mean, I think you're going to see a lot of involvement from both government and, private sector.
So you were saying voluntary participation by companies. What do you mean by that? And what are some companies that are doing this?
Yeah, it's a good question. So essentially, investors, consumers, employees, they're putting demands on boards and on companies to say, hey, what are you going to do about climate change? And in response to those demands, they set goals. And oftentimes they're setting goals that have a specific claim around them and a set of almost accounting rules around them. And so then they go out and they meet those goals by you know, either reducing their own emissions in their own facilities or by supply chain participants. And that's one area that farmers come and play in. And so I think what gets interesting about it from a voluntary perspective is, you know, I think the companies that are participating, they're definitely on the edge, but it's something we're seeing become more and more widespread because of that investor pressure. And, you know, I think it's something where the time has come where it's becoming a lot more real now.
So I might be getting way ahead of our talk here, but a guy told me the other day that he foresees that we might see carbon credits for each individual. So Tanner, this is how much carbon you use based on how much fuel you use, how many kids you have, how much your house payment is, etc. That someday you will technically be owner share in carbon credits of 40 acres in Story County, Iowa. And it's just an offset so that each individual someday, and I'm like, whoa, 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 now we're talking, you know, huge, way bigger than it is now. You're saying it's voluntary now for companies that so choose to offset their carbon footprint. What do you think it will ever be not voluntary to where we as individuals have to offset our carbon input?
I mean, I think in terms of even being able to quantify that, there's a lot that would go into that. And if you remember, you know, 90s, early 2000s, what people were saying about, you know, technology and agriculture, that, you know, you wouldn't need an agronomist because the computer's going to figure that all out. And we all know how that played out. Mm-hmm. You know, I think technology plus a human's a heck of a lot better. And it can't solve all the problems. I wouldn't expect to see that at an individual level anytime soon. But I would say, you know, look north of the border. They have a carbon tax that's coming down the pipe, and you know, it's going to impact us all, you know, across a lot of different facets of our lives. But I expect to see kind of energy and fuel hit first would be my expectation.
Tanner knows this because I say it all the time that data is the currency of the internet. I think carbon credits may be the new currency of farming.
Well, they could. You're absolutely right. So companies right now are voluntarily making some moves because of social pressure or pressure from their clients, like you were describing. That's what's in it for the clients, is a reputation, a PR move right now. So what is in it for the farmer?
So at its simplest, it's a net new revenue stream. And that's the most important thing. We're not talking about a rearranging of the agribusiness pie here. We're talking about net new dollars into the industry.
Okay. But I, from my understanding though, is only those who have switched a farming practice qualify. Is that true, or can just anybody qualify?
No, that's absolutely true. And that's the big elephant in the room here. And it's honestly the biggest single thing that I struggle with in both talking to farmers and trying to figure out this space. So the reason for it is pretty darn simple. If I'm a company or if I'm a government, I'm making a claim, and that claim is about what I'm going to do in the future. And so everything that's being done today is embedded in that baseline. And so those net new dollars need to drive net new activities to meet those kind of accounting rules or carbon accounting rules that are out there. And so it really sucks that someone, if I go to my home state, someone like Gabe Brown, who's kind of the poster child of regenerative agriculture, he pretty much will never be eligible for a carbon program as the rules are written today, despite doing all sorts of great things for, you know, for his local economy, and environment. But if that carbon program doesn't exist, he's going to still keep doing those practices. And that's really the logic.
So I'm pretty sure right now we have a bunch of our listeners screaming at the radio, you know, with the same frustrations that you're hearing about how it's unfair, how that's not the way to set a plan like this in place. But I talked to Chad Hart with Iowa State University and kind of went through some of the high-level things that he's sharing in his presentations and articles on this topic. And the word that he taught me was additionality. So the baseline is where we're at today. Everything in the past doesn't matter because we are where we are today. If we want to make a change going forward, it's somebody along those lines who can make that change on their farm.
Now, I thought you had to have like 5 years past history to show that you've been doing these practices to get into this program. From a couple of local farmers I talked to, that they said when they applied for it, they had to get their records from 5 years of cover crops, organic farming, etc. So you're saying the past doesn't matter, but I'm hearing from farmers the past does. What you got any clarification on that, Ben?
Yeah, so the records that you're hearing from those farmers, those are used for two reasons. One is to confirm eligibility. So they're saying, hey, this is what that baseline is. And that's you, and that's used to say, hey, you know, are you actually eligible? Are you actually implementing a new practice? And the second piece, when we get to the measurement, they're using that data to calibrate these models and set that baseline so that we actually are measuring in a relatively accurate sense. And so when we go forward, we're able to measure, you know, hey, this is what would have happened under a kind of business as usual scenario. And this is what did happen because you made those changes, and that delta or that change, that's what you get paid for. And this is really important because if you were just straight up measuring and you had a drought year, you know, carbon actually drops in a drought year, and you actually might have be negative in terms of the amount of carbon that you're sequestering, but you don't have to pay into that in this scenario because you calibrated that model. You provided that historical data.
Okay. So we look into our historical data. What changes or what practices would make me qualify? Is there a list that our listeners can, you know, reference to?
Yeah, it's going to vary, again, program by program, but the ones you're going to see consistently, tillage. So moving from a conventional to a reduced tillage system or a strip till system or a no-till system or adding cover crops, that's where you're going to get the biggest bang for your buck. You'll also see programs that include things like nitrogen management, so reducing the amount of nitrogen or the efficiency of which you're doing it, you know, incorporating new crops into the rotation or incorporating livestock. Where we at Corteva, we're really focused on the tillage and the cover cropping right now, just because we really feel that we want to make sure that someone who's participating in this program, it's worth their time. So we're making sure that, hey, you get the volume in order to, you know, to justify that time of submitting that data.
You just unpacked a bunch there. So if you can give me top five ways to improve your farm to get carbon credits. You said tillage was number one.
Yeah, improving from a conventional tillage to a either reduced or strip till.
Okay, what would your second, third, fourth, fifth be?
Yeah, so I'd say one and two are going to be tillage, so no-till, strip till. The third one is going to be cover cropping. From there, there's a lot more ambiguity about what happens, and you really got to go program by program. But nitrogen management matters.
Okay.
Incorporating manure.
Gotcha. And so they don't necessarily add up for as much of a carbon credit. And we're going to talk about what guys can get for carbon credits in terms of dollar figure here in just a little bit. But those are your big five of what we can do. So let's say we heard this, we think we want to be in it. Now, what do we do?
So, you think you want to be in it. I think the first thing you need to do is confirm your eligibility. So if you're talking about our program, you can reach out to a Pioneer rep or a Corteva rep that you have, and they'll connect you to our group that deals just with carbon. and we'll make sure and really confirm that eligibility. But I guess even before we start talking about this program, I think, David, there's a really important point here, which is you got to make sure that this practice makes sense for your operation. And start with the practice. Don't start with a carbon program. So if you're thinking about switching to something like no-till or strip-till, that's a big change. We're talking about equipment. We're talking about your weed control program. Like, this is that carbon isn't everything here. You got to treat the acre and you got to treat your operation. Carbon is just a layer on top of that.
Well, I guess let me devil's advocate that a second. If it pays, not to be the materialistic weasel of the bunch, but if this pays $250 an acre, I might go buy new equipment and change my practices. So when we're talking, if I can make an additional $200 from carbon credits an acre, and I'm seriously going to take a look at what my practices are.
So Ben, that's a good point to kind of interject in here. What are we seeing for dollars per acre on a compensation basis?
Yep. So if you look at across the different programs, you're looking at between $3 up to maybe $20-$25 an acre. So I'll tell you what our program looks like and how that goes, that breaks down. And then we should come back to what that means in that holistic ROI.
Perfect.
So for us, we lock in the price, $15 a ton. So we're locking in that price. So you have a guarantee and we're guaranteeing that there's a buyer there. Now we're going to measure your outcomes, because I don't want to tell you, farmer, what practice to do on what acre. That's that farmer's decision, and I don't know what the right answer is there. So whether you want to do strip-till, whether you want to do no-till, whether you want to do cover cropping, whether you want to do both, how you want to manage your nitrogen, we're gonna model those outcomes based off of that field operations data that you send us to generate that volume. So roughly a half ton an acre for those tillage practices, maybe a little less to a little bit more. It's a wider range on cover cropping, so it could be about 0.4 to maybe 1.1, 1.2. Again, depends on where you're at in terms of cover cropping. So we're talking a half a ton to a ton and a half per acre at that $15 a ton, $22-$23 an acre today at current prices. That doesn't pay for, the bag of cover crop seed, the termination cost and spreading it out by itself. So you really have to believe in these practices, and the role of the carbon credit is to help accelerate and de-risk this practice adoption today until we get to that $200 an acre that Tanner's all excited about.
So excited is you took that completely out of the sales. Like, I'm sitting here flat footed because that figure is not going to buy a $150,000 strip till bar.
Mm-mm.
That's obviously going to be a little extra dollars added to the bottom line, but I think we have a long ways to go. If this is something that the government or the people, I'm using air quotes, want us to do to change our practices, it's got to have to increase dollar-wise to entice us to change. Otherwise, why wouldn't we continue doing our same practice we have been if it's proven?
Well, I think the big point here is the practice needs to make sense for your operation right now. So I completely agree that, for those that want to drive change, like, you got to pay up. And you don't see us pushing sustainability initiatives that don't support the economics of the farm. Like, the first step of sustainability at the farm gate is economic sustainability, and then drive it from an ecological or environmental standpoint. But so when we look at, where we engage on a program like this, we want to find a farmer who might be dabbling in these practices, who's kind of on the edge, and where that extra $7 to $20 an acre, that really de-risks that practice change or allows him or her to move a heck of a lot faster. Now, we do think that there are pricing tailwinds on the horizon, so we could see, $20, $30, $40 a ton credits within, the near future. All of a sudden, the economics start to change a little bit there. But this is where, again, like, we're not trying to lean into the hype. We're trying to lean into reality here to say this is not right for everybody. This needs to be right for your operation. Start with agronomy, move to profitability. Now let's talk about the program and how that fits into it.
So is there any correlation between, I'm going to call it crappy ground and good ground. If I take crappy ground and then I'm going to say didn't produce any carbon credits, and then all of a sudden we start doing some like serious practices on that, rather than changing my best ground that I have corn on, that I get a good yield on, that I'm not doing strip till, or I'm not doing something like that. Is there any correlation between soil values and type? I take the crappy ground and then get more credits because I turned it into something better.
Yeah. I mean, I think where you see the correlation is just the normal agronomics, right? So where you have thick black dirt or where that maybe used to exist, that's where you have more carbon storing potential.
Gotcha.
Versus maybe if you head out west where it's a little bit drier and you have a shorter growing season. So that's where you see the variability. I guess I'd say is, you really need to look at where these practices make sense for your operation. So one of the biggest areas that we see: erosion control, weed control, nutrient management. Like, that's where you need to start in this. And again, the carbon program can help accelerate your adoption of these practices and de-risk it. But, you know, you need to make sure that you're not, you know, really impacting your yields or your logistics or your equipment decisions, and integrate this into your whole operation.
So I'm going to take a mid-episode summary, because I don't know if we're going to be able to do this all really well in a summary for all this information. It's getting spread out. So the carbon market right now is partially driven by society wanting corporations to voluntarily be more sustainable. It's not enticing us as farmers to change our product, to change our practices, because the dollars don't seem to be there in the current market. We may have a tailwind that we're following. And right now, the only farmers that qualify are those who have made changes to their farming practices in the last couple of years.
So Tanner, you got me wondering, and Ben, hopefully you can answer this. If I'm a farmer that's already been awesome practices, and I'm like, well, wait a minute, I'm getting screwed out of this, can I go back to non-good practices for non-carbon practices for a year, and then all of a sudden qualify and say, oh, now I'm going to do it again. I just took a year off of doing it right and getting the carbon credits, and now I did make a change. Can I backdrag to come back in?
Generally speaking, no. When you sign that contract, you are not only saying, hey, this didn't happen, but I would say, even for those who might be a little bit more nefarious out there, please don't do that. Not because I'm asking you to, because it's actually pretty darn easy to see tillage or cover crops on a satellite. So you're going to go through all this work, you're going to screw up your own agronomic system, and then you're not going to get paid. And it's not a particularly good thing to do.
Because that was another thing that I talked to Chad Hart about. I'll get into that here in a second. But two quick questions that we had from listeners. What about pasture ground that has had livestock on it? Would that qualify?
If it's in pasture today and you're making a change that essentially increases stocking density or uses some of the regenerative grazing practices, there are some programs out there. It's not as widespread as what you're seeing in row crops. So I'd say maybe, depending on where you're at. Again, it depends. Not okay. The most satisfying answer.
And then what about sequestering carbon using synthetic nitrogen? So is it only rewarded if you're switching away from synthetic products on the nitrogen side?
No, absolutely not. So remember when we were kind of talking about that baseline and that delta scenario? Yep. We're talking about change. So incremental changes are going to get evaluated. You don't need to completely rip off, you know, and change your whole system. So everyone who's been in this program with us and all the work we've done over the last couple of years, where we actually have gotten a farmer paid, they're still using synthetic nitrogen.
Okay. So there, at least there's two positives. We haven't had a lot of positives this show for those farmers. Incremental changes in your pasture ground might qualify. So just look into that. So you were mentioning that don't go screw up your operation 1 year just to try and make it to where you qualify, because satellites are going to see those cover crops. Who is auditing this process? You talked about a contract and getting this put together. Who's the auditor? How's that process gone about?
Again, it depends and it varies across these different programs. So we're working with a group called the Ecosystem Service Market Consortium. I know it's a little bit of a mouthful.
Yeah.
So it's an NGO, independent third-party marketplace, made up of commodity groups, agribusiness companies, some NGOs, that's trying to stand up something here that gives farmers a little bit more optionality and is very science-based. And so what they're doing is they're actually interpreting the rules from these, you know, these kind of quasi-regulatory bodies that are even above ag and don't work in ag, that set the broader greenhouse gas accounting rules. They interpret them for ag, and then they help to do the certification or validation, or they work with other certifiers depending on the assets to arrange that, so we can kind of hide some of that complexity from the farmer and our field team.
So you made a comment earlier that you're guaranteed a buyer. So there's companies out here that are basically telling me, I've seen a couple at the farmland conferences that say, this is what we have, GIS that's going to register your stuff, computer software, it's going to tell you how much difference you have. Can you just give our listeners a list of two or three of them that are out there, or maybe there's more than that?
Got it. Yeah. I mean, you can look at the who's who. I mean, I think folks like General Mills, Cargill, Nestle, those who've set out the kind of their goals and what they're doing. All those folks are like members of the Ecosystem Service Market Consortium, and are all doing that today. I mean, then there's the big names, right? Obviously there's Indigo. Bayer has a program out there. TruTerra just launched a program. Nutrien has a program. I think, you know, hearing about a program is pretty darn easy. But finding one in your area, it might be a little bit harder, because a lot of these are actually pilots. And in some cases, you have companies that are kind of buying their own assets themselves. And so it just kind of starts to get to, you know, within all this complexity, if I'm a farmer, like, what do I go do? What are the questions I need to ask?
With that being said, you got all kinds of companies out there. Some are pilots, some are new. We're making a decision as a farmer to pick one of these. Is there two or three things we should look at? Two-part question here. Is there two or three things we should look at when we're looking at a company? Let's just start there. I'm going to stop at one question because that's a loaded question. What am I looking for?
So what I would be looking for, and what I tell my buddies back home, you know, even before we had a program, is what am I getting myself into? What are the program requirements, and what's the optionality that I have? So what data am I going to have to support? How long is the contract? What practices are required? And then from there, I really go to, well, what type of credit am I generating, and do I think this is going to drive me revenue over the full lifetime of what a deal can be? These contracts are onerous. Typically, you know, you'll see up to 10-year contracts in this space. And, you know, just committing to those agronomic practices for 10 years, like, there's quite a few farms that are willing to do that with the appropriate amount of opt-outs. And those opt-outs are important. But being locked into a buyer too, that's a big deal. And that's an area that when we were looking at this space, we were just trying to sit there and we're like, how can we figure out how to give that optionality? Because as much as I love Corteva and I trust Corteva, if I'm a farmer, I wouldn't necessarily want an input company determining the pricing on a 10-year contract for me, especially with how nascent the space is. Call me skeptical, but I think we need to have a little bit more farmer focus in this segment.
When I talked with Chad Hart, he was wanting me to really make sure our listeners understood that those contracts and contract details should be the extreme focus of the farmer when you're considering. Because what if, like you were saying early on, we get into a drought year? Is there something in that contract that protects the farmer? You know, what if you decided to run a tile plow across there? You know, is that considered a practice that could, you know, void
interrupt
your contract?
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of these, I think the terminology he used was clawbacks, is they're going to pay you for these credits, but if you do something wrong, you may have to pay them back. So it's nice to know as a farmer and fully understand that contract as to what your repercussions might be if you don't stick to it.
Well, and it made me think, just as you were talking there, Ben, about, you said 10-year contracts, and I just thought right away of like CRP ground, of terraces. The government gets involved in farming all the time, and me as a farmland sales guy, when I go to sell farmland, then I transfer that, or we have to say the CRP goes with the land, but you can't take it out of CRP. So it makes me wonder, when I sell farmland, if you have a contract for carbon credits and I come in new and I have different farming practices, I'm probably going to have to live by whatever you signed up for.
Yeah. And this is where you get into the rented ground versus owned ground. And it all comes back again, program by program. There's so much fragmentation in the space. So maybe I'll just tell you like how we're approaching it. So part of it starts with ESMC, who we've talked about, that Ecosystem Service Market Consortium. We're giving folks the optionality to opt out at 2 years. There's not clawbacks in there. We as Corteva are taking on that risk. And we're essentially saying at that 2 year point, we need to earn your business and you have alternatives because we're working with this consortium. There's 60 other companies that could buy your carbon. You got Nutrien in there, you got Cargill, you got General Mills, you got some darn good companies out there that are doing things and paying farmers. And so we're saying, hey, join this program. You have an option at 2 years because there's so much that's changing. Hopefully we can simplify the heck out of this process for you. But if we haven't, you know, no sweat, like go with either another program or stop altogether if this isn't worth it.
I gotcha. So you said there's 60 plus people buying credit. I'm going to go on my own tangent here for a second. I every time I've been hearing carbon credits for like last 10 months, and I've seen it at shows and egg expos, I've thought to myself, I'm an auctioneer and an entrepreneur. I thought, who is going to be the marketplace for selling these? And if there's 60 different companies that want to do it, how do we go from Bill Gates buying the credit because he needs it for Microsoft or whoever to... Where's the middleman? Where is the brokerage? Is this a government regulated deal, or can I literally want to, can I start a auction platform like AdWords on Google to where people compete for your carbon credits and Cargill and Indigo and all these people, they can list their carbon credits that they got from the farmer, collected from the farmer through a contract. They could list them on my website platform and then I'll sell them to the highest bidder. Is there a platform out there like that?
I wouldn't say there's a leading platform. I'd say there's a lot of folks that are trying to do that. So you have folks like Nori that are trying to do that. The CSMC, they're trying to do that. Indigo to some extent is doing that. I think when we look at the marketplace, you know, we as Corteva, I don't think we don't want to be market makers in the way we're aligning ourselves against the farmer. So we want to align our incentives with the farmer and then, you know, connect into those emerging marketplaces. And so if we're able to kind of hide a lot of this complexity behind our software and our field teams, It makes it a heck of a lot easier for you to go interact with multiple marketplaces without having all those crazy switching costs, re-entering data, different contracts. Like, you got to make it a heck of a lot easier. Otherwise, yeah, this isn't going to work.
So when I talked to Chad, he was mentioning that there's been conversations about the USDA running a carbon bank to help set up a standard or a baseline for this market. But as our listeners are considering this, they're probably wondering, okay, we talked a little bit about what qualifies. Is there a cost for a farmer to qualify? And then if so or if not, what types of records do they have to get together in order to prove that they do qualify?
Yeah, good question. So most programs right now, there's not an upfront cost to a farmer to qualify. And most, I'd say most programs are essentially charging the buyer for some of those transaction costs today. And so to essentially what will happen is you sign the contract in a program like ours, or many programs that are a little bit higher rigor. You'll have soil sampling that'll be done. It'll be paid for by someone like Corteva. And then you're going to have to provide some historical data to calibrate the baseline, like David was talking about before. So that's going to be a little bit of yield data. In some cases, it's several years. For us, it's 3 years of yield data, 3 years of your nitrogen management data. Then go and do the practice, right? That's the hard part. That's the important part that we spend a lot of time talking about. And then towards the end of the year, then you're going to have to submit your harvest, your nitrogen management data. What did you do in your tillage? What did you do in your cover cropping data? And then what did you do on planting? We take that, we send it to ESNC or another kind of marketplace or measurement platform that tells us how many credits were created. And then we come back and we pay you.
Tanner, I'm just thinking of the amount of jobs this could create. I'm thinking of like farm credits or FSA offices. You think about FSA offices and how many gals are in there, how many forms they have to
not enough to
certify your 156EZ form, and you got to register and you got to go back in every time. And, you know, this might be another branch of that, but then we're talking people that have to certify it every year and what did your crops do?
Auditing.
There is a ton of jobs maybe created from this that's silver lining on the backside,
right?
More agriculture-based stuff. But so, Ben, are you going to be able to carry these over from year to year? Like, let's say I had taxes. I got a good year. Let's put these on 2022 because I didn't have as good of a year this year. I don't need the carbon credits. Can you carry them over and sell them whenever you want, just or like store it in the grain bin?
Yes, there's not a liquid marketplace right now, and so I think, you know, in a year or two, hopefully there is. And in that point, I think there'll be a lot more self-marketing. The way that we look at it is, right now we actually have to go connect buyers and sellers directly because we don't want orphan assets. I don't want somebody to generate a credit for where, you know, nobody's going to buy that thing because maybe it doesn't have enough rigor or the buyers, you know, you just can't reach them as an individual. And so I think where I see the market heading is, you know, whether it's 1 or 3 or 5 years, I don't know, but essentially it's going to be, you know, farmer A, you know, you do a lot of your own complex grain marketing. You really want to lean in and learn this space. You get to go do that. But we'd also provide something, you know, that's a little bit easier, kind of a Corteva led or a aggregator led marketing that's more like an index for carbon. But right now, that doesn't exist. And so it's a lot harder to have the normal flexibility you'd think about with, you know, rolling grain contracts or moving taxes around just because we don't have that number two yellow corn of carbon yet.
I think to pull something out of the middle of this episode is this is a ever-changing market. We still don't know what we don't know yet. And if you are a producer that is up on trends, have the data and the records right with you, it might be worth looking into this right away to see if you can cash in on some. But I would probably caution the listener from entering into those long-term contracts. I mean, I'm envisioning the like a DirecTV contract to where it automatically renewed at the end of 2 years and my premium went up $15 and you just don't really think about it and you go to get out of it and there's a penalty for canceling. So would you say that's probably accurate, Ben? Is you really got to know what you don't know in order to make sure you don't sell yourself short? Would it be worth waiting, do you think?
So this is a really good point. So you probably noticed, despite, you know, leading a carbon program for a big agribusiness company, I come in with a healthy dose of skepticism and reality. and this probably hasn't been the most hype related episode you've ever had at the beginning of it. But the counterpoint to what you're saying, Tanner, is that sometimes if you don't do something now, it's not going to be available. And this is where we come back to additionality and eligibility. So if I believe in these practices, I'm switching my operation to switch to strip till right now or I'm interested in it, and I go and do it, but I wait, I'm not going to be eligible next year. And so, and like I have a good friend from home who I told them to sign up for a competitor's program, our biggest competitor. I'm like, no, you need to sign up for this. This is right for your operation. And it helped de-risk. And he was able to double the amount of acres that moved to strip till. Like, that was the right answer for his farm. And so while I have painted the picture of, like, you need to be hard on us, you need to be hard on anyone, really take care of yourself and make sure this makes sense for your operation, push on the contracts, we're talking about $7 to $20 an acre that could double or triple in a couple of years. Like, that's real money, especially if we have a downside. So I do think that while we've been realistic, like, it's really important. You need to maintain the optionality on the upside too. And there's a lot of potential here.
So Tanner and I always talk about advisory teams. So if you don't know banking, then you go talk with a banker. If you don't know grain markets, you hire a commodities broker. If you don't know weather, you maybe get somebody like BAM Weather and they're going to help you out. Who in the marketplace, we got lots of vendors that want to capitalize on this and startups that are saying, I mean, I just mentioned that I'd like to do it. I'd love to capture the money in the middle between selling it to the end product and in between them and the farmer. Who can we trust? Who is there any trusted advisors out there that we can go to and say, here's the contract that Indigo gave me, and here's the one that Cargill gave me, and here's the one that XYZ company gave me, and Corteva, et cetera. What works best for me in my scenario? Is there a agronomist that tells you this, or are we just Old West cowboy?
I mean, well, we're certainly in a little bit of the wild, wild west. I think, you know, you have to engage your whole farm team here. So if you're talking about practice transitions, you need to bring in your banker, your equipment dealer, your agronomist. You need to bring all of that in and make sure it makes sense. And in terms of how you manage your data, like, make sure that fits in terms of what you're already doing today or what you're willing to jump into. In terms of an advisor specifically on these programs, I don't know of any, you know, one perfect panacea that's out there, but there's a lot of folks that are giving some really good information. I think commodity groups are really leaning into this to try to provide a little bit more clarity. Look at groups like Practical Farmers of Iowa, Extension. They're maybe not opining as much on the programs themselves, but they'll tell you what to look out for. And then for us, like, selfishly, like, as Corteva, we're trying to arm our field teams with options and provide that. And we're going to be transparent. And I think that's where we're trying to differentiate, is, again, be tough on us, because you need to be.
So, Ben, I was sitting here waiting for you to say, Ben, with Corteva as your trusted advisor. I mean, that was like a lobbed up softball for you to name drop right there. But that's kind of been the best part of our partnership with Granular, is knowing that they have the data recording systems, the data management tools out there to probably make this process of collecting the data a little bit easier than some of these others. So having the married relationship between Granular and Corteva has got to be an effective one, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, for us, it all comes down to carbon's a layer on top of what you're doing. So if you're already collecting all that data, a lot of the costs, in quotation marks, of this program go down in terms of time. It's just a heck of a lot easier. The other big thing is, once you're putting all of this data in there, like, do something else with it. Help to run your operation. Which fields are more profitable? Which hybrids are more profitable? What practices? Like, how could I tweak my operation and use all that data in multiple ways, not just one?
Tanner, that's fantastic in your words, because think about this. If you could get $30 credits, and let's say, I don't know what Granular costs off the top of my head, but let's say it costs $30.
Well, when you use Farm for Profit.
Well, see, so if you use their product and you could pay for it. So let's just say you're a listener and you want to use these carbon credits to pay for that, but it also improves because you have the data. You just use your carbon credits to counteract and pay for the data that now you can make better educated decisions on the rest. So it might not just be, you know, $150 an acre dollar figure. It might be, you might get the 150. Remember that gal that we talked to, she said you could do 600 bushel corn, but that's where it starts.
Yeah,
and then every time you do something to it, it comes down, 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 down. We're all, every company out there trying to get 10 more bushel yield. She says, you start with a high number. You're just taking it off every time. How about we try to not take 10 yeah, off?
Take less off.
Take less off. So this might be a system that could help you have that data to do it using carbon credits.
And I think I heard you say in there, Ben, that the Granular portion, a service that Granular provides, that this portion that would help track this is free, correct?
That is correct. So I think the way that we think about it is, if you're already using a Corteva advisor, a Pioneer advisor, a retail one, bring your own advisor. We have a free piece of software that integrates with the data that you have. And then you can use that to better run your business and get some of these carbon credits.
Okay. So as we get close to the end of this show, what is the risk to the listener? What's the worst case scenario? Are we getting sued? Is there financial penalties? I mean, what could be a risk that we want to watch out for?
Yeah. So again, push on whatever contract you're signing. Make sure that those liabilities are very upfront for you. In terms of our program, we as Corteva are bearing that risk. In terms of, you know, hey, this is, as long as you meet the rules of the program, like there's not going to be a penalty for you in terms of those clawbacks. That gentleman that you talked to, was talking about there. I think, that's an area to lean. The other risk, like we've talked about, is just agronomic. Make sure it makes sense for your operation. And make sure that, it makes sense for, you know, how you want to manage your business.
Now, you know, now we're talking Corteva can help, and you have these advisors and you have these layers between the buyers. What can we do as the grower to keep everybody out of our pockets? You know, we don't want to share our pizza pie with everybody else. Why can't we go straight to the buyer of this and just have a buyer-seller relationship?
You know, I think when there's a fully liquid market and we have our number two yellow carbon, I'm excited for that day because it'll force us to be even better in terms of competing and bringing down those transaction costs. So I guess as a farmer, I mean, I think there's all the normal things that the farmers can do in terms of, you know, pushing on their advisors and their vendors to make sure they're getting a fair shake and not just, you know, taking them on their word. I think what you've probably heard from me today is a lot of the healthy skepticism that I want farmers to have to make sure that they're pushing us in the right direction, working with their commodity groups to make sure that the market structure is going in the right direction. But really, I think, when I think about this opportunity broadly, it's about growing the pie totally. And I don't mean that just in a cliche way. It comes back to net new revenue coming into the industry. And as long as there's a healthy amount of competition, we'll be able to bring these transaction costs down and be able to make sure that the majority and the vast majority, I'm not talking about 51%, goes to the farmer, because that's the only way we're going to be able to drive practice change to what David was saying before. You know, 20 bucks isn't going to cut it, but we're talking 40, 60 bucks. Like, that might start driving some even more change. And there's a lot of other innovators that are making that change simpler. You look on the equipment side, you look at what folks like Jason Mock are doing with some like really, really cool stuff and different cropping systems. Like, there's a lot of innovation happening right now. It's an exciting time. So I would say, you know, don't be fearful of success either.
Oh, I like that. So Dave, I'm going to give you a heads up because you're not expecting this, but I'll have you summarize this episode. And Ben, as we wrap up here, we asked you a lot of questions. We bounced around quite a bit. Is there anything else that you could think of that it would be good for our listeners to know about carbon credits or the process or anything of the like?
I would just really reiterate the whole, you know, the opportunity cost of doing nothing. And so give it a look. Ask a few different folks around about it. There's a lot of programs out there. See what works for you. For us, Corteva.com/carbon, you can get in touch with someone or talk to your Pioneer seed dealer at this point. See what we have and see what other folks have. And I guess the thing that my biggest two fears are, one, that people sign contracts that aren't good for their operations. But the other one is that they're foregoing a revenue stream that could be 20, 40, 60 bucks an acre in a couple of years. And so take a look. It shouldn't take too long and give us a shot to earn that business. And we'll be radically transparent. And you can hit my Twitter or anything like that. And we'll answer any questions for any of you.
Perfect. So as Dave summarizes, we always prepare our guests for the same question every episode. So be thinking while Dave does that about the common characteristic that the most successful farmers you know all have in common. So while Dave summarizes, think on that. Fire away, Dave.
You bet. So today, guys, we're talking with Ben Gordon from Granular, and he sounds like a carbon expert to me. Thank you for answering all the questions. So we unpacked a whole lot of stuff, from what's in it for the farmer, what do we got to do. The biggest thing I took away from this episode, Tanner, is we are paid on the change. You have to make a change. So you have to make a change to a better practice, just like money's made in the margins, same deal. And so it's in a couple different ways we do that: tillage, cover crops, manure management, livestock practices. And basically, we're going to get a carbon credit. Carbon credits right now might not be to the point of where we need them to be, but it sounds like you need to get in and get going if you plan on doing this for the future and move ahead. We talked about government insight. We talked about how they're going to do it and who's going to credit it. Who's the oversight? Who's going to review all this stuff? And there's a little unknown. We're in the Wild West right now. So we don't know, but I think the second biggest takeaway I got to Tanner today is make sure you read that contract. And if you're not good at reading contracts, you better find an advisor to read that contract with you and bring it in, because we don't want to get hooked into the wrong contract with the wrong advisor. And there's lots of companies playing for the market share. And of course, companies like to make money. So we need to make sure that we're being smart. So that's probably the challenge if you go there.
Yeah, the challenge direction I was thinking about heading is, we're Farm for Profit Podcast, and we just introduced to you another revenue stream that might help boost your profit. So I can't help but challenge you to explore it. You may know right away that your farm doesn't qualify, but you need to explore this option. I really like the way that Ben put that, is you might be missing out on opportunity here. And if you don't get in now, you might not eventually qualify. Now, I'm not trying to tell you it's right for every single farm. So my challenge is to explore it, get a hold of Ben or someone that you trust as well, and find out if your farm qualifies. And then I like that, Dave, employ that advisory team when you do get a contract to make sure that it's going to work for your farm. So Ben, how do you think we did? And after that, what do you think is the most common characteristic of the most successful farmers that you know?
I think you guys nailed it. You lean into both the opportunity and the appropriate amount of skepticism. And I hate to be a broken record, but I think you kind of hit it with the farm for profit piece, like the top producers that we're working with. They're looking at this from a overall system level profitability lens. What does this mean agronomically? What does this mean logistically? And then really pushing on that contract to make sure that they can get that extra revenue stream and maintain that optionality to have an even bigger revenue stream in the future.
That's fantastic. So I think we're going to get ready to wrap up. Dave, you got anything else you want to add?
Nope.
I'm going to just state that carbon@granular.ag, is that correct, Ben? Is that a good way to get a hold of you or your team over there at Corteva and Granular?
That's a great way to get a hold of us, or corteva.com/carbon, and it'll give you more program details if you don't want to talk to someone right away.
Okay, and remember that Granular is a proud partner of the Farm for Profit podcast, and if you as a listener have any ideas or topics such as this one, which came from a lot of you, remember to share that with us, farmforprofitllc@gmail.com. Find us on all social media platforms. Please remember to like, rate, review, and share, and until next time, have a good one.
Remember, if you aren't farming for profit, you won't be farming for long.